Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 256.
This week on the podcast, hapless white nationalists have failed to grasp the irony of carrying tiki torches while marching against people of color. The tiki torch industry responded with fire, the police did not.
And Trump does not have the best words when it comes to racism, and that may be his biggest problem.
Plus, Trump tries to break up with his CEO exes. Ha! They did it first! What a loser!
And Beelzebub Bannon is gone, just in time for us to discover that Trump has always been the White House's leading white supremacist.
Plus, Catalonia is the latest victim of what Trump might call real terrorism, meaning it wasn't committed by white guys with torches.
And Americans grasp on to the once-in-a-lifetime eclipse as a sign that Trump's days are numbered. We're desperate out here, guys.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Man. Guys, we tried to go on a vacation because we thought, hey, it's August. Nothing happens in August.
Man.
But that was before
Trump America.
But we really
had to get it together this week and have a bi-coastal podcast because what are we going to do? Not do a podcast this week?
Yeah, the whole world
fell apart
this
week. We're on vacation. We're not idiots.
Exactly.
Jesus.
So this week, I think, and we say this all the time in Trump America, but this felt like a turning point week for a number of reasons.
It did.
And in a way that's different than the way that turning point weeks in the past have felt before, because Trump seems immune to turning point weeks.
Things really just get
progressively worse in his administration, and they get progressively worse for him, and that doesn't ever seem to matter, and he just continues to be the president, and no one does anything.
Exactly.
But this week felt a little bit different because it felt like we had all landed on something that Trump supports that is actually unacceptable to a majority of people in an active way, not in a passive
and
way.
And unacceptable to most people, not just, I mean, obviously, if it's unacceptable to just like, for your neighbor to be a white nationalist and a Nazi, then like, clearly it's also not acceptable for the president to be one.
Correct.
So
yes.
I think that that's what was sort of like the big yikes of this
week. Right. There's plenty of places where I think everyone secretly knows their neighbors are white nationalists.
Right.
But
and I think on some level, most of us not so secretly knew that probably Trump was right there with him. But to get it like in such a sort of like full-throated manner this week was really sort of like, I figured he would at least sort of attempt to make it through his entire presidency and like not ever like actually say it. I mean, like,
well,
we were all thinking it already, but like,
but
it just was really unsettling in that respect.
This is like part of the legacy of the Trump family is that they really aren't afraid to say it.
Also,
I mean, you know, his dad was arrested at a Klan rally in New York in 1927. I mean, they are Klansmen. Like, his daddy was a Klansman.
I mean, infamous racists,
but
the Trumps.
Here's the thing. Pete Sessions, also an open racist. I'm sure his dad was a Klansman too. I mean, I think there's probably plenty of people who currently serve in government whose daddy, you know, whose daddies were in the Klan.
Oh, Jefferson. You mean Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the third family might be a racist? Interesting.
It's a bold statement, but I'm standing by it. But I think that all of them understand that there's a reason the Klan wears sheets over their heads. And it's not just to instill fear in everyone that anyone might be a Klansman. It's to hide their own identities, too, so that, you know, they don't look like assholes who are unable to participate in normal civic life. And so these people who descended from the kind of people who, you know, apparently know to wear the sheet also knew how to mask their racism in language about the American dream and American exceptionalism and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and all these other things that are, you know, American dream rhetoric is at its base quite racist. But it doesn't ever make explicit mention of race, so it doesn't sound like you're supporting the Klan when you talk about it.
Right.
Donald Trump, as you pointed out to me earlier, this is one area where he really doesn't have the best words.
Yeah, I mean, like, everybody loves that he, you know, well, not everybody, but his supporters love that he's not a politician. He says it like it is, and you know, even though he has been on every side of every issue. So saying that he tells it like it is a questionable thing to say about him. But regardless,
well, he tells it like it is for him, like, in the moment.
Right,
which,
exactly.
Which is different all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I was texting with Lila this morning because I was watching CNN and Rick Santorum was on. And, like, Rick Santorum is a person who is probably as racist, but just sort of, like, knows that as a politician, like, he has to talk about how, you know, all men are created equal, and that's how the Constitution was, even though, like, obviously it clearly wasn't, and, like, you know, and God, you know, our God-given rights, and our, you know, and, like, everybody in America has the opportunity to make it if they just really try, and, like you said, like, that all has, like, built-in racism in it, and you don't really think about it in that way necessarily, but, like, when you really distill it down, it is, because all of that stuff is fucking garbage.
Exactly.
And I think the one thing that, like, my takeaway was this week was that, like, the GOP really, and I know some of them spoke out against it, but, like, they really have to fucking own this. Because, you know, the reason that they are not as, so many of them, you know, you look at, I think I read something like, as of like Friday, like 20 GOP House members had like come out and said something like against this. Like, you know, people talk about it, like how Trump has to sort, Trump knows that these people, you know, these like, these Nazis and Klansmen and like, let's call them what they are, because that's who they are his base, but they are the GOP base.
Yeah, it's not been as if, in the base of
it's
every
not as if,
GOP
like, Trump, like,
representative that's Trump, been elected to...
Yeah, exactly. Like, Trump didn't sort of, like, all of a sudden, like... I mean, I think he gave them voice, but they've been voting Republican since birth, these people.
Yeah. But that was before... Well, that's after they stopped voting Democratic because the Democrats let
them
down.
Well, right,
down,
yes. Ex-
by
right,
moving
exactly,
away from
yes,
their racist yeah, platform.
So
in
the old ones, not since birth.
Right. The old yes, ones changed parties, but for the wrong reasons.
For and the wrong reasons, right, exactly. Yes.
The new ones have been voting Republican since birth because at its base, a lot of the rhetoric of freedom that Republicans embrace is about racism. There's no way to look at America and say that every single person has an equal opportunity to make something of themselves unless you have decided that people of color are for some reason less deserving of making something of themselves.
Right,
so,
exactly.
You know,
well,
and,
it's
and,
ignoring,
and women
you know,
are less,
it's
you know,
ignoring and, a, you know, 200, more than 250 years, really. I mean, it's, an,
well, right,
you know, it's ignoring like it's our entire history
400 to 500
like,
years
you know,
of,
white
yeah,
people like arrived.
Exactly. I mean, and so, that's, you have to be comfortable living in a world where that, you know, incongruence doesn't bother you to be comfortable with American Dream rhetoric anyway. So, right, that as a policy, a basis for your policy is already sort of implicitly racist. And then these are all people who, I mean, on this podcast, we've been calling them genteel racists because right, that's what I, you know, the sort of Lindsey Graham genre of people are genteel racists. Their policy right, is racist. They are racist themselves, but they couch it in polite language. And that's how a lot of Southern representatives have been. And, you know, some Northern representatives as well, you know, since time immemorium.
Sure.
But in any case, things change this way. Well, if you've been living under a rock and you haven't heard what's happened in Charlottesville, we're not going to be the ones to tell you because right, you've been missing major, you know, you've been missing all the news. I think
right,
the
also,
important...
Also, like, do better with your lives.
Do better with
like,
your lives. The important points for me are several comedic points and several disturbing points. I learned some things that I hadn't learned because of this. You know, I've been following the removal of Confederate statues all over the country just out of general interest. But I hadn't realized how many of them had been placed where they were in the 20s. That was really
right,
when the Klan was at its height. It was not
yeah,
in the, you know, it was not in the post-Civil War era. It was
no,
not in the pre-Civil War era, which is when all of these should have been placed there if they were going to be there in the first place.
Yep.
They should have been placed there during the reign of the Confederacy.
Yeah.
But
they're,
it was
they're all about power.
It was
just
all
like
about
a
yeah,
reminder
it was all about a reminder
to black people who's
yes,
in charge.
Exactly. And, you know, the 20s is when the Klan was having, they were having big marches on Washington. They were having big marches in New York. They were having big marches all over the country. That's why Fred Trump was arrested in 1927 at a Klan rally in New York. It was a big rally. It was like, I think 10,000 people or something. It scared the bejesus out of everyone. But that's why they were able to, you know, to host a rally that big where there were arrests, is because there were a lot of them. And they were funding statues all over the country. You know, there were even some plaques in Brooklyn that had to be taken down that were about Robert E. Lee. And what I thought was so curious about them was they were also placed there in the 20s, and they were placed there by the Daughters of the Confederacy's New York chapter. And I was like, why do the Daughters of the Confederacy have a New York chapter?
Right.
Who was like, well, we lost the war, let's move to New York and open a chapter of the Daughters of the Confederacy. I mean, that in and of itself seemed scary and crazy to me. But these, you know, the sort of culture of the Confederacy that we have now was really a modern invention. It wasn't really about the Confederacy, and it was about white supremacy. And so that's why these statues are extra concerning because of that. They're not really reminders of the history that they're supposed to be reminders of, or that they claim to be reminders of. They're reminders of a more recent history that's even scarier. In any case, once a bunch of people start doing a torchlit walk around the UVA campus in support of these, P.S., don't be white supremacists using tiki torches. Yeah. Tiki torches are one invention that was not created by white people and is not and by the way is about having a delightful backyard barbecue, as the tiki torch companies were forced to remind us, because suddenly their product, which is all about having fun luau's and shit like that, was suddenly became a symbol of hate by a bunch of idiots who didn't realize that tiki torches were not invented by white people anyway.
And I want to say one more thing just before we move on from Lee as well, just in terms of things that we learned about those statues this week, is that Lee himself did not want these statues, at least when they were sort of like being talked about after the Civil War, to go up, which was in large part why they didn't initially, because he actually pledged allegiance to the Union. I mean, to the United States at that point.
And we should know, to the Union, because he had been a Union soldier before.
But he didn't want these types of things to hold the country back from basically moving forward.
Yeah, well, we should remind you that these are statues of traitors to the United States.
Right, exactly.
These aren't statues of patriots. Robert E. Lee is not a patriot. He was a Union soldier who decided to lead a war against his own military in an effort to maintain an institution that was explicitly racist and exploitive, that was going to allow the South to plan their economy around free labor.
Yeah.
And that's not patriotism. I mean, what other nation can you think of that has this many monuments to traitors?
Right?
I mean, that's already crazy. In any case, in case you were wondering whether there were not other elements of the hatred that were part of this supposed, you know, peaceful walk to support Robert E. Lee statues, they were also chanting things like "Jews will not replace us." So their minds were not just on Robert E. Lee and the and their sadness that slavery is gone. They had all sorts of hatred to espouse. In any case, the next day, the reason there were so many people there to have a tiki lit torch walk was because they were holding a Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville last weekend, where a bunch of totally objectionable groups were coming together to, I guess, you know, bemoan how terrible things have become for white men. The next day, their marches were planned, and a lot of counter protesters showed up, as you might not be surprised to find. Charlottesville is a college town. It's fairly progressive there. And not only were they just scared because terrifying white people had been holding a torch walk through the campus of UVA, but also these white supremacists had come to town and been terrorizing the community. There are all sorts of reports of, you know, there was a meeting of activists held in a church that got surrounded by them, and they suddenly were trapped in the church and had to be escorted home. They were going into majority African American neighborhoods and making trouble. They even started harassing a gathering of clergy who had come to kind of like be on the front lines of the counter protest so that shit wouldn't get out of hand.
Yeah.
And so
But they're Christian guys. Don't worry.
Yeah, don't worry about it. They're super Christian. They're so Christian that they only. But they're kind. They're a special kind of Christian that's only for white people. Christ in their right. in their world is only for white people. That's a yes. he's a different Christ than the rest of us are apparently familiar yeah. with, but mm-hmm. very powerful for them. But so in any case, they were super out of control, and in the process of their protests. Antifa, which is an anti-fascist group that is sort of the violent wing of the left that steps in if there's, you know, and they're primarily defensive. So they don't usually go and like commit attacks, but they get violent if violence come, you know, if there are violent reactions to left-wing yeah. protests. They were basically, the police basically didn't do anything about all, you know, these right-wing protests were, they were armed, they were angry, they were violent, and the police weren't really doing anything, so Antifa kind of stepped in to protect, like, the clergy that was being attacked by them, and to protect, yeah. you know, the neighborhoods that they were going into and mm-hmm. trashing in an effort to scare everyone, and shit yeah. like that, and,
they were the, no, Lila, they did. They were the bad guys on the other side.
Yes, I think, of course.
I think that's. I believe that's what I meant to say.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But things kind of fell apart, came to a head because the white nationalist protesters had a guy who drove his car into a crowd of counter protesters and killed somebody and also injured yes. like 19 people. That's the last estimate yeah. I heard. I don't know if yeah. it's more now, but so. This all kind of came to a head because a young woman from Charlottesville died. Yeah. And then all of a sudden everyone was like, well, wait a minute. you just committed an act of terrorism. I mean, this is terrorism. Yes. It was terrorism to begin with.
You used ISIS tactics.
You used an ISIS tactic to right. kill, you know, to kill somebody of an opposing political view.
Right.
And so that's kind of that kind of forced the president's hand in responding, but also yes. it forced the rest of us's hands in terms of paying attention to what was going on. And then all of a sudden, have you also seen that Vice interview with that neo-Nazi, Chris Cantwell?
Oh my gosh.
Who yes. then after he says all this violent shit and shows these poor Vice ladies who are interviewing him, his guns. And he's talking about how, you know, sometimes they have to kill a few people to make their point and stuff like that. Yeah. And so right. then there's a warrant out for him because he's basically threatening violence and violent, you know, fatal violence against counter protesters. And then he has a video where he's crying about it that he releases on his own webpage, which just goes to show you how delicate these supposedly tough gun wielding, you know, white nationalists are.
Delicate
They're all
flowers.
So sensitive. They're such delicate flowers for being such violent assholes.
Yeah.
Well, he got banned from OKCupid, sort of like so he's going to have to cry alone.
I know. Well, and this, I mean, and that is, goes to one of our sort of points that we have made many times just in regards to gun violence, which is that really doesn't anybody who has a gun, haven't they dreamed about killing somebody?
Right. What are you doing with a gun if you haven't dreamed about using it?
Right. Like, that's...
People shouldn't be with guns.
That guy was just really itching to have somebody, like, you know, come up to him and, I don't know, do whatever.
His finger was on the trigger. He was ready.
He has had, like, fever dreams about, like, shooting Antifa members.
Yeah.
That guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And just sort of, like, innocent black people who just happened to be going about their business.
I mean, well, them, obviously.
Yeah. He's had awake dreams about that.
Yeah.
The, right. the fever dreams were... Were a separate thing, but in any case, we as the internet started to identify these people, we learned that some, you know, people were not okay with their participation in this march. I think a lot of these men went to this march thinking, oh well, I'll just go to this white nationalist march and then pretend like I just thought it was an innocent thing because I care so much about Robert E. Lee. And then, you know, it turned out that society was just as you are allowed to say whatever dumb, objectionable thing you want to say, you know, you do have free speech to do that. People are also allowed to not want to work with you after that, though. Like, the First Amendment, as my mother has been saying, doesn't protect you from being a jerk and doesn't protect you from the social fallout of being a jerk. So
no, it doesn't.
That's what counter-protesters are there
you,
for.
And it doesn't protect you at work, certainly.
Right. No. Because if you're espousing an ideology that is about, you know, is about accepting and encouraging direct acts of violence against people for, you know, no reason other than the color of their skin or their ethnic background or whatever, people might not want to work with you, and that's okay.
Yeah, like, that is definitely okay. Yeah.
By the way, in Durham, as this was going on, they really showed everyone how it was done in Durham. In Durham, they just sort of, a bunch of protesters went and toppled their own Confederate statues. And by the way, have you seen the video of that? The statue like crumbled. It was so, like, I was like, how did the statue stand for so long as it was? It looked like it was falling apart. But the sheriff arrested the woman who had climbed up on it and strapped it so they could pull it down. And the town just like blew up. Thousands of people went down to the sheriff's office to turn themselves in because the sheriff was saying they were going to find the perpetrators of this. So like the whole town basically went, and there were pictures of the line, which just snakes all, you know, snakes through this huge plaza in front of the sheriff's office. And the sheriff finally had to be like, no, we are not accepting any more people turning themselves in. No one else is going to be arrested. I believe, and I heard this through rumor, I haven't actually seen this in print, so I'm not positive this is true, but I know someone who lives in Durham, and she was saying that the sheriff arrested this woman, but the DA, who is African-American, was said they weren't interested in pressing charges. So yeah. I think that this woman's not going to be charged, which would be amazing. But there were immediately like a ton of, you know, websites and shit that popped up to fundraise in case she was charged. And then the next day there was going to be a white nationalist rally there, and they scared them away because so many protesters showed up, and it was a peaceful protest. And then apparently the white nationalist rally reconvened like privately for like a cowardly attempt to like thumb their nose at the counter protesters. But, sure. But they had been scared away. So that's what's going on in Durham. Durham is funny because it's really close to Charlottesville, but it's really having a much more positive, you know, response to all of this. Of course, they didn't have 10,000 white nationalists show up in their town, so that would be a different situation. In any case, part of the reason this has been so dramatic is Trump's evolving slash devolving reply to all of this, or response to all of this. The day of the violence, he wanted us to know that there was violence on many sides. Apparently there were more than two sides that I hadn't known about, because he was going on about how the many sides where there was violence committed. Then after 2 days of silence on that, he makes a statement where it looks like a hostage video if you look at it with the with the eyes of
the fallout from basically everyone, including a lot of members of his own party,
being like, no, you can't make excuses for white nationalists.
Right, exactly.
So then on Monday, he releases a statement, the hostage video statement. And then he makes his first trip to New York since his presidency began. I just happened to be in New York when he got there. And when he arrived, he was met with people chanting, New York hates you. Because that's what New Yorkers are up to. So then on Tuesday, he's supposed to give a press conference about infrastructure. And, you know, Elaine Chao, his infrastructure chair, is there standing behind him. That's Mitch McConnell's wife. And he's got, you know, some of his other cabinet members standing behind him.
Yeah.
And instead of saying really anything about infrastructure, he just goes on a long rant about how, you know, there was violence on many sides and there were good people on both sides.
Yeah. And by the way, if you want to find the official statement that he made, like a transcript of this insane press conference that he gave, you will find it by the date and Trump's remarks on infrastructure.
Seriously?
Yes. I learned that on Brian Williams that night when he was talking about it. Like the official sort of like...
The official statement is Trump's remarks on infrastructure.
That's how it's been filed.
That's funny.
Yeah.
He failed to make any remarks about infrastructure. It was up to his cabinet to later step in and make remarks.
Right.
But by the way, he's going on about how some of these neo-Nazis are okay as he's standing in front of several Jewish members of his cabinet, of Elaine Chao, who is Asian American in his cabinet, and a woman. And so it's like their faces are...
Well, and John Kelly, his new chief of staff, like there's actually...
Yeah, there's a hilarious picture of him.
There's a video of like...
Or video
like
of him,
just the camera on him, and looks just in sheer utter horror.
I mean,
But they didn't know he was going to take... They didn't know he was going to take questions, supposedly.
No, I mean, here's what I'll say about that, though. They know who they work for. And right, I was they say. Know that this is a possibility with Trump. And they also knew that he was privately very angry that he had been forced to walk back his statements. And so they are covering their own asses when they say they didn't know what he was going to do. He had a printed copy of his remarks from Monday in his shirt pocket. He was prepared to make a comment about this. He walked in and someone I'm sure had to help him use the printer because we know he doesn't know how to use a computer. He walked in prepared to make this comment. And if his staff is telling us that they didn't know that that was going to happen, then his staff is literally the most incompetent staff on the entire planet. Because, and that's a problem for that for us as well. Like, it is worse for me if they didn't know, because I could have known if I had, you know, they found that there's a like a Reuters or some photograph of him pulling a printed copy of his Monday comments out of his pocket. So people were aware he was going to address this. And then also his staff and people, you know, inside the White House, the leakers, if you will, reported that he was in a much better mood after he had made this comment because he'd, you know, he'd finally shown us. You know, he wanted us to know that Nazi marchers include some good guys. It's not all bad people, Brent. It's some of them are good people.
And they that's just, what, like, we really got his, we got his true self there. I mean, he will never, you know, he can try and fix it, although I don't think he's going to. He can try and do a lot of things after that. But what he will never be able to do is say, that's not what I really meant.
Yeah.
Because
well, it was clear. I mean, he's proud of how that was what he really meant.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And that's why we're saying he doesn't have the best words.
No.
He may think he has the best words, but when it comes to racism, he doesn't have the best words because the best words have been hiding overtly racist policy for generations in the Republican Party. The best words are owned by the people that we know are racist and have yet somehow been not so unobjectionable that they haven't gotten elected by scores of people who would never. There are a lot of people in America who are racist, who would be very uncomfortable calling themselves racist and who don't want to be pointed out as racist. And those people are going to these people with the best words and saying, you know, I know that this is a little racist and I'm a little racist, but as long as we're not going to talk about it, I'll vote for you.
Yes. 100%. You know? Yeah.
So we've just proven scientifically he doesn't have the best words.
No, definitely not. And we sort of knew that already. But
and I would contend that I usually think the right usually does have the best words. They are great at using words to obscure what they actually mean. They, the Democrats have terrible words. They're so fucking long-winded and they don't ever make any damn sense. You know, I mean, they have terrible words. The far right has the best words and they no longer do because we have just, the curtain has just been pulled up on what those words mean and what they are.
Right. Well, and that's what, now is when I'm going to share my anecdote from therapy this week.
Perfect.
That I texted you about.
Brent and I are about to start a long theory-based section of the podcast
I did was talk about this in therapy this week. And, but, I mean, because I wanted to, I was, like, this presidency has been stressful. Like,
exactly. I mean, no, you're not the only person using your therapy sessions to talk about this,
no,
I'm sure.
No, I'm not. However, I got an interesting, I felt like I was the one, like, sort of asking all of the questions in my therapy session because, like, basically, and I think this is absolutely true, but, you know, there's this sort of, like, you know, there's this psychological theory from Carl Jung who basically says that, like, whatever it is that you either personally or, you know, a group collectively sort of, like, you know, puts in the shadows, like, does not deal with, that is there, basically festers to the point where it, like, literally manifests itself in some way, like, in front of your face in a way that has to be dealt with. And, like, that is absolutely what's going on here in terms of, you know, the GOP and what they have been doing. Because, like, you know, whether it's their policies, whether it was birtherism, whether it was Obama obstructionism, whether it's denying that our incarceration problem is based on race, whether it is denying that, you know, all of the black men who have been shot by police, you know, are just, you know, oh, well, Michael Brown stole something from the market.
Right. Those Skittles could have been
All of those things have finally come to us. And literally, they came to us in the form of the fucking president. Yeah. So that is terrifying. but is also like, maybe can we actually now deal with it? I don't know. I'm not certain, but like, I think that there's like maybe some hope in that, in the sense that like, can we look and be like, okay, maybe that's not who I am, or maybe that's not who we collectively are, and like, I don't like that guy anymore, and I'm not going to vote for him again, and I don't know, but like,
well, and I think, because my theory, I think, dovetails nicely with your theory.
Great.
Because my theory is about congratulating America for making a great PR choice. Because we have had Klansmen as presidents before. I mean, this is not our first Klansmen president. Sure. We've had genteel racists as presidents before. Many times. Yep. Many, many times.
I mean, not many sides. I mean, recently.
Recently and not recently. I mean, in all the times. There's,
well, sure,
you know,
right, yes, exactly, yeah.
But we, I think, made a smart choice this week where, and this is something I thought of this only because I was vehemently disagreeing with a friend of mine who was making what I thought was a fair point, but not, I don't think, a point I agree with, that she was frustrated that we have been sort of collectively calling these white nationalists Nazis. And she was saying, you know, this is to pretend that this is related to some, you know, to a movement that was about, you know, German, you know, socialist nationalism in the 1930s is unfair because this is a very American problem. We've had it the whole time. It's not about, you know, it wasn't caused by Germany giving us dumb ideas. It wasn't caused by Europe in general. It was caused by the fact,
on some level,
you know, that so it's to pretend like it's Nazis sort of makes the problem sound like it's not ours. And of course it's ours. You know, the Ku Klux Klan is ours. The,
yes,
you know, the long history of hate groups and the long history of just sort of publicly supported racist action is ours. But I disagree with her vehemently anyway, because I think we've actually made like a pretty genius PR switcheroo in calling these people Nazis, because it symbolically makes them sound like enemies of the state, which is something that we could never do with the KKK and we can never do with homegrown white nationalist groups, because we, you know, you don't hear that someone's in the Klan and think, well, they're not American. They're not, they don't have our, you know, they're not sort of like trying to do something that they think is good for America. It's a very, the Klan is a local problem, and it is, something just really dinged over here. But it is something that, because it's homegrown, we are sort of able, that we have been kind of like grappling with the knowledge that it exists and trying to ignore that it exists for a long time. We have had presidents who've been in the Klan. We have had open support of the Klan among elected officials in many places in the past. You know, we've had, the Klan is a part of the fabric of America, and that's embarrassing for all of us, frankly.
Yeah.
But because of that, it doesn't sort of put up your alarm the way that not the word Nazi does. The word Nazi is genius because in all of the places where people voted for Trump and people are sort of tacitly comfortable with white nationalist language and white nationalist, you know, groups, most of those people also had a grandfather who fought the Nazis in World War II. So the Nazi label really makes them sound like enemies of the state. And that is the word that we needed to make people be like, well, I don't think of myself as a racist, but I hate black people, but I'm also not comfortable loving Nazis, you know? You need people who also hate, because it's not like, these people are not sitting around being like, oh, I'm not an anti-Semite, and that's why I can't, you know? It's about it's a nationalist identity that makes you not want to be a Nazi.
Totally.
But if these people
want to sit around and try and claim that they're not Nazis, then they should also stop going to rallies with quotes
with Nazi flags,
Adolf Hitler
on
their t-shirts.
Exactly.
So it's hard for them to deny racist, that's what they're up to also.
Totally. Every racist person's grandfather went and either gave their life or had friends that gave their lives, or their whole generation basically gave up their lives in certain respects to go fight the Nazis.
Yep.
They are the epitome of all evil. That's the word that epitomizes evil. And it's not because people love Jews, and it's not because they stand against the things that the Nazis stood for. It's because they were our enemy in the last major war. And whatever, that's a cheap thing, but we have it. But when we have a Nazi in the White House, we need some easy branding to get people on board. And the word Nazi is it. And,
totally.
You know,
I've been calling him a Nazi sympathizer all week.
Exactly. Yeah. No, and that's what you should do, because it's the word Nazi indicates a foreign threat that is not of America. And it's one, you know, we have to grapple with why we have been comfortable having a Klan this whole time anyway. And there's, you know, there's plenty of things we have to grapple with.
I mean, that's certainly a separate issue that we should not ignore.
Well, and yeah, and it's not even a separate issue because these people are the same people ultimately.
They're the same people, right, exactly, yes.
But branding it as Nazis makes it socially unacceptable to sympathize with them.
Yeah.
And if you are sympathizing with Nazis, you are not just sympathizing with people who hate, and that might be a problem for me and you, but it's not a problem for everyone in, you know, who's been living in Klan America. But it is a problem because Nazis are the political antithesis of what it is to be American.
Yeah.
You know, it's symbolism.
Right. It's hard to go around talking about America first and making America great again
while sympathizing with Nazis. Right. So whatever reason, you know, it's people are uncomfortable with the word. It's the opposite. It's kind of like, I would say it's a remaining outpost of, like, you know, you used to not be able to call anyone a communist because then communist didn't mean the political ideology of communism. It meant enemy of the state. And Nazi, I think, has a similar, you know, I don't think communist has the same connotation for people our age, but I think Nazism does. So I feel like we've made a smart branding choice, guys. If people are going to tell you that this is, you know, not fair because this is a homegrown problem and we shouldn't be blaming it on Nazis, I will tell you that I think that this is the smartest branding choice we've ever made and we should go with it.
I'm there.
Yeah. And then, you know, once we realize the fact that Klansmen are essentially Nazis, then have a problem with the Klan, you know? That kind of clarifies what our problem with them is, instead of being like, well, they've always been here and they've always been bad, but it's like having a racist uncle. You can't do anything about it. We could do something about it, you know?
Right. Yes.
So, in any case, let's make sure these people are branded so that they are not of us, and therefore we can sort of like fight them as the other and not feel like we have to love them because they're our uncles.
Right. Yep.
In any case, so Brent and I have been very busy theorizing all week.
Yeah. Yes.
But there's been a lot of fallout.
I've been busy stealing theories.
Right. Yeah.
From my therapist.
Exactly.
Which is fine.
You're paying a lot of money every week.
I was going to say, I fucking
week.
Paid enough money for it. Like, it's mine now.
Exactly. You bought that theory. Fair and square.
Damn right.
This is America and capitalism rules. There has been a lot of other fallout from this Charlottesville situation because a lot of people who felt they might be comfortable sort of secretly associating with Trump had to kind of walk that back when they realized that he was going to not just privately be a fascist, but also openly be a fascist or a racist fascist at that. Because his more outright than usual racism this week started to piss off the business people on his economic councils. So, you know, he had his manufacturing advisory council and his strategic and policy forum, and he had all the CEOs that were going to come and tell him about how they could cut each other's taxes and have no one notice and whatever else they were sneakily doing in those councils. I think three of them had quit before this. Elon Musk quit, Bob Iger quit, the guy, what's his face from Uber had quit. Those were related to the Paris Accords or just customer feedback. But by the end of this week, 11 of them had quit because this week, the CEO of Merck, who was the only African-American CEO on the council, left because Trump is a white supremacist openly. Fair enough. And then suddenly all these other CEOs started to follow because there suddenly started to be talk about whether we were going to have to boycott everyone. And I was exhausted by this thought because it's like, I'm boycotting so many people for reasons I can't even remember that I cannot be adding like every, you know, one of those, like a company that, you know, is, you know, like the Johnson & Johnson of whatever, you know, brand, you know, whatever kind of consumer product it is. I don't have time for this much boycotting. So I was happy that so many people decided to quit of their own accord. And that because of it, Trump tried to break up with them after they had broken up with him and decided to end the council. So, but we should give credit to the people who left before that.
Yes, we should.
So we have the CEO of Merck.
One thing that I thought was interesting, and I heard someone point out, and I can't remember who it was, but basically, it's interesting because Trump himself fancies himself a business person, and he is. Now, we can certainly have a debate as to whether he's a good business or a bad one, because like that's a discussion. But one thing that Trump himself never had was he never had. I mean, yes, he had hotels, but like he didn't actually sort of like have any sort of like big. First off, he never really had like a a board, or at least in terms of like a sort of like large group of people that he had to keep happy.
Because it's all just family members.
He never had, like, in the sense where, like, Intel or, you know, Merck or whatever, like, these are people who are sort of, like, selling a product. He wasn't selling a product, like, in the sense that, like, so I think that he was surprised by the, on some level, the reaction to this. But, like, these people, like, can't continue to associate with him, like, and then
sell their products.
Still have a successful business.
Right. And, like, and we might remember that every time Trump has...
The fact that he didn't realize that, I think, says something, like, about the type of business person he was.
He's the kind of guy who tried to start a steak business, but nobody bought his steaks. He every time he's tried to sell a product, he's failed. That's,
right, yes.
The product that he sells is his name.
Right.
And yeah, so he's even more sort of vulnerable than I think a lot of these guys are. But when you're selling, you know, workout gear, as Under Armour CEO is, or computers, as Intel CEO is.
Who's very conservative, that Under Armour guy. Yeah. Probably a racist.
Yeah, he's a total asshole. But he's still got to have people buy his leggings. You know, he needs to be able to have a customer base that is interested in purchasing his product and not his competitors' products. Because the one thing Trump doesn't have is competitors in his exact business. There are other hotels in the world. But his business is his name, really, and there's no one else with the Trump name. So it's not like you can choose another Trump name to have. You know, like, it's not like you could be like, well, I don't like the Trumps. I'll go with the Johnsons. You know, like, it's not the kind of people who were patronizing Trump businesses were buying his name, and the businesses that were actually buying his name were buildings that he was just sticking his name on. And it's a very specific niche that doesn't really have the same kind of competition as the leggings market.
Right.
So he doesn't understand. In any case, So Brian, what is it, Krasnich? I can't pronounce his name. It begins KRZ. That's crazy. But he's the CEO of Intel. He quit. Kevin Plank, Under Armour CEO, quit. Scott Paul, who's the head of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, quit. Trumka, the AFL-CIO president, quit. Thea Lee, who was formerly with the AFL-CIO but is an economist and was on, she was on the Manufacturing Council, quit. And then just before he announced, first of all, on Monday, Trump tweeted, for every CEO that drops out of the Manufacturing Council, I have many to take their place.
Sure. So then, none of them materialized, by the way.
None of them, no. So on Tuesday and Wednesday, 3M CEO and Campbell's CEO quit. And then apparently he didn't have anyone to replace them because on Wednesday he disbanded both of the councils.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that's not the only councils that have been disbanded, because there was a council on the arts. There was like a White House council on the arts, and it had like Cal Penn and Jhumpa Lahiri and like, you know, artsy people. They just disbanded themselves because they were like, fuck this.
And then, did you hear that have you seen that thing that they, in that letter that they wrote, like the first letter of each paragraph in the letter that they wrote spells resist?
No, I didn't see that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Good. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you get a bunch of artists together,
letter.
Artists and writers.
That's what happens.
Have a council on the arts. And then, you know, this week the Kennedy Center and honorees were announced, but all of them said they weren't going to come if Trump was going to be there. So he had to say he wasn't going to go to the Kennedy Center honors.
Yeah.
That he's been disinvited to events all the way until December. He's not going to have any friends at the end of this.
No.
I feel like the one thing I'm really curious about with this is, like, to what degree this is just going to destroy Ivanka's social life.
God. Right?
Like, I feel like she is not going to have any friends after this. Doesn't he care that his favorite child isn't going to have any friends?
No.
Apparently not. No. It's wild.
Also, she could leave. I mean, she can't leave the family, but like...
She could leave. I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. She doesn't deserve to have any friends.
No.
Her father is a literal anti-Semite, and
she's
not... I mean, and, you know, she would be saved in the purge because she's actually... of, you know, wasp genetic material or whatnot, but her children wouldn't.
Right.
Doesn't she care? Doesn't she love her children?
Right?
I respect that maybe her marriage to Jared Kushner is a business arrangement, but I hope she loves her children.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, this is from a presidency that has already engaged in a healthy dose of Holocaust denial. So, you know.
Well, yes, exactly.
This shouldn't be shocking. But once he's apologizing for people that are shouting, Jew will not replace us at their marches, you would think that there would be an opening for her and Jared to be like, hey,
Right.
You know what? This wasn't a good thing. They're not good people.
Exactly. Yeah. The other thing that I want to say, just going back to the rally, like, really quickly, is that we talked, I think actually it was maybe even on the last podcast that we did, but we talked about that Boy Scout speech that he did.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where I had sort of felt like, and I was said at the time, I remember saying it, where I was not proud of the fact that I sort of like felt like I had gotten to the point with him where if I sort of like took him more as a sort of like Sarah Palin-esque person or a sort of, you know, just basically like, you know, clown show to a degree, like that I was able to sort of like, you know, get past his insanity. This week was, while
you proved you wrong,
obviously tragic for all of the reasons that we have said, I feel like for me, and probably to a degree, a lot of people who I think had been stressed out enough that they had like checked out a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that it has been good and it's shitty that we've had to do it. But I think we're back sort of like in the game a little bit with him.
Yeah. Because we're back to a place where it's not acceptable to be checked out and there's widespread resistance to what he's doing and people are talking about it.
Right. It's not funny anymore.
Yeah. No. Yeah. The Boy Scout speech was funny. So.
Yes. Correct.
He did, I think, he jumped the shark. He, you know, he went a little bit too far in the direction of what he felt was entertainment persona Trump and, you know, found himself sympathizing with Nazis.
Yeah. But I'm glad to be sort of back in the, like
this is a problem with the solve it phase.
Trying to be vigilant.
Yeah.
Here. Because it's important to be.
Yeah. And I was excited that I was starting to get some of my weekends back. And now that's all shot to hell. But, you know, you have to do what you have to do.
That's right. You do.
Speaking of weekends, there was a sort of well-publicized attempt by white nationalists to hold what they were calling a free speech rally in Boston to be like, fuck you, New England liberal elites. We'll march on your town and show you. And something like 500.
They didn't show anybody anything.
They showed nobody. The rally had, I think, 500 people or something on Facebook that were claiming they were coming. But then estimates vary between 15 and 30,000, but that many counter-protesters showed up to take on what ended up being like a couple dozen white nationalists.
There was
a lot of free speech had, but it was just by angry people trying to get rid of racists. The free speech organizers kept being like, how could they be against free speech? This is a free speech rally. But their free speech rally had failed to include any of the kinds of free speech that the 30,000 people who showed up to protest it were interested in hearing.
We're looking for, which is the thing about free speech.
That's the thing about free speech is someone else can always speak louder than you.
Yep.
30,000 people can always speak louder than you. Yeah. But if you look, the pictures are funny because as this free speech rally is supposed to be underway, first of all of the free speech rally participants had to walk into the rally being shouted with counter protesters shouting shame at them. So that made it less fun. But then there were also times where they got lost in the counter-protester crowd and counter-protesters had to basically encircle them so they wouldn't get hurt because angry, you know, like they had to protect them from each other a little bit. But they do that. Counter-protesters do that. They're the kind of people that, you know, want to protect free speech. They just don't want anyone to show up, you know, wielding weapons and telling them that's free speech, which fortunately Massachusetts is not an open carry state. So they were not, like in Charlottesville, allowed to carry their guns with them because that really changes the tenor of your free speech when you're also armed and threatening people.
It does.
But the president had, in continuing his tour of confusion this week, tweeted yesterday afternoon a number of confusing things that ended with him complimenting the Boston counter-protesters.
Yes.
At 3:39 yesterday, he tweeted, "Looks like many anti-police agitators in Boston. Police are looking tough and smart. Thank you." The police, by the way, this time, we're not going to be able to get away with letting the white nationalist protesters try to beat everyone up because they work for the city of Boston and not, you know, and because of that, their patrons were not going to allow that. Right.
And then 4:41, in the next 2 minutes, I think John Kelly stole his phone.
Yes. Right.
And said, hang on a second. I got this.
It was the next 20 minutes because first he tweeted, "Our great country has been divided for decades. Sometimes you need to protest in order to heal, and we will heal and be stronger than ever before." But he misspelled heal. So we know that was him. He spelled it H-E-E-L.
Right.
Unless John Kelly's not much of a speller.
Which is a word. And
it's the wrong
spelled
one.
That way makes it a much different tweet.
Exactly. So then at 4:41, they retweeted it, but with the correct spelling. And then at 4:41, they also tweeted, "I want to applaud the many protesters in Boston who are speaking out against bigotry and hate. Our country will soon come together as one."
Hmm.
What that, like, huh? So he's now suddenly happy that what he's calling anti-police agitators in his first tweet are out there speaking out against bigotry and hate.
Man, help. Guys.
What does this, what is happening?
Well, he's insane. Which, even members of his own party started to realize this week, by the way. Supporters of his.
Yeah.
Bob Corker, who was like an early adapter, was like... Yeah. He has not shown the... What was it that he said? I can't even remember. But he really sort of like...
Something about how he's not showing leadership skills or something. He had a whole thing about that. Yeah. This week was a week that you had to say something to come out against Trump or you were siding with neo-Nazis.
Right.
So at least we know that Bob Corker...
By the way.
Yeah. Too many people.
Too many.
We now know that Bob Corker knows better than to side with neo-Nazis, which is something I learned about him that's new.
Exactly.
He's still willing to side with a bunch of terrible ideas and certainly is willing to side with racism, but he's not willing to side with neo-Nazis. And that's, I think, an improvement. That's better than I expected from him.
Yeah.
The other Charlottesville, not fallout, but interesting thing that came up that was timed interestingly for all of this is that Bannon is gone. On Friday, Bannon left.
Yeah.
It's still unclear. Because all of the reporting is contradictory. It's unclear whether he left or was fired. It's unclear when it happened, because some people are saying he quit 2 weeks ago, and some people are saying he was let go and yesterday, and so nobody knows. It seems like he knew it was coming, because he gave that interview to, what was it, the New Republic or something, where he shit all over
like
Trump's foreign policy.
Land.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it seems like he might have known. He's going back to Breitbart. The real question is, for me, what this means about the Mercers. It's pretty clear that the Mercers are trying to launch some sort of news networky thing to rival Fox. And I think this for a number of reasons, one of which is that Fox is not the number one cable news network as of this month. MSNBC has surpassed it. And also, the baby Murdochs, the new Murdochs, the ones who have taken over, have disavowed Trump. So you're starting to see some pushback on the Murdoch end. You're starting to see that Fox's audience is dwindling, perhaps because all of their popular hosts turned out to be, committing assault. And the only one they really have left now is Sean Hannity, who is still getting great, ratings, but is basically their only successful property that's left.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and it would not shock me at all if that were the case. And it also wouldn't shock me at all if Trump ends up being a large part of this. And in perhaps maybe the not so distant future.
Yeah.
I agree
with you, because I think that was his intention anyway. They were always plotting for a Trump news network.
That was always
part of the plan with them.
I think that, we saw calls on him to resign this week for the first time. And we have another theory paid for at therapy. Because he thinks that he's going to resign at any moment. And also then there was the very next day there was that article where I saw the guy who co-wrote The Art of the Deal was he's about to resign.
Yeah, I saw
And him. While I think that that is maybe who knows how long it could last, I always sort of thought that he wouldn't because of his ego. But my therapist had an interesting point in that because of his ego, that is sort of why he is obsessed with himself. It's why he watches cable news all the day. It's a steady stream of him. I mean, he's he's the most popular guy in America right now, just in terms of amount of time spent on television. And you know what? Even on a lot of Fox News, it's really, really, really shitty. And it hasn't been great for the last 7 months, but of late, it's been getting really worse. And for an egotist, nothing hurts more. And he has sort of already set the stage for it on a lot of levels. I think he's given himself a few outs. I think right. that he, all of this talk of the witch hunt and the, you know, talking about how Mueller is a plant of the liberals and he's a Democrat, the fact that they are now sort of like coming after his kids, I think there is a narrative there for yeah. him to get out and not like be considered a coward, at least by the people who
or by him
have always loved him. And then he can go start Trump News, which was what he always wanted to do in the yeah. first place.
Yeah, he didn't want this job that's so hard.
No.
This job is way too no. hard. His actual job is not that hard, you guys.
No.
Like, he doesn't even need to know how to use email to do it. So right. this is way yeah. harder than his last job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too hard.
But the fact that Trump is, like, so high on Bannon leaving and going back to Breitbart News just makes the whole thing all the more curious.
No, I think that that's right. And I think, you know what? That would be a much better use of the Mercer's fortune than paying for a bunch of horrible right-wing candidates to run all over New York State and nationally. Totally. I would rather they put it into some nonsense news network, give yes. Trump his dumb platform, that 22% yep. of people who have any interest in what he's saying can watch it ad nauseum as far as I care.
Right.
And just don't make it socially acceptable for them to talk about it outside of their homes, which is yep. what it was to be a Trump fan before this, and yep. then move on with your lives. Because exactly. I have a strategy that I think we should all be pursuing, which is something that I came up with this week as I was walking past Trump Tower. And I thought to myself, what would make someone like Donald Trump want to resign? And then I thought, what if everyone just started saying, you know, the best people I know would resign in this situation?
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Right?
That was
like,
good.
What if Chuck Schumer kept getting on television and saying that instead of talking about Trump? What if the Republican Party was just like, well, you know, I mean, well, the one fact we can't argue with is that the very best people that we know, they would resign. You know, right. like the greatest men on earth, they resign in these situations. Like, what yeah. if we just made it, redefined what it is to be great for a week, got him I to like resign, it. And then we can go back to knowing the truth. But he can right. leave with his head high. No, yes. You know, as the greatest person.
That's right.
You know, because he's one of the best people, Brent. Right. So I don't see why he wouldn't do what the best people do.
More in 7 months than almost any other president.
Well,
in
exactly.
history,
I mean, I feel like he is very susceptible to inceptioning. Which is why yeah. I've never understood. It's hard to make an entire nation inception you because it's easy to gaslight somebody like him, but it's hard to get everyone in on the plan.
Right, so right, yes.
I have been frustrated by how hard it is to start a gaslighting strategy with him.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like if the one thing that we know is he does whatever he thinks the greatest people do. Now, he's often been wrong about what that is, so I don't see why he has to be right this time, but right. we could just help usher him in that direction.
Yeah, I like that.
The greatest people that I know would resign in this situation.
Yeah.
Because they would be terrible at being the president.
Right. Yes,
in any
just
case,
like he is. Yeah.
Another, but he also had another advisor leave this week. Carl Icahn left, which he's a billionaire who has... he left just a few minutes before the New Yorker published an article that charges that he was using his post for personal gain. So he left in disgrace. And now Trump is without one more billionaire friend. I am yeah. curious what all of this means in terms of his financing a campaign anyway.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't...
Oh, yeah.
The Mercers bankrolled, not just bankrolled a lot of his campaign, but also were the data operation behind his campaign. And... I would contend that it will be more difficult to have their data operation be successful if the Democrats have like a halfway logical candidate.
Agreed.
But I also think that without their data operation, he's kind of up a creek, so yeah. he might want to resign.
I think this is going to be interesting to see how this Bannon thing plays out because like his plan right now is to go back to Breitbart, obviously, and then to go, as he said, I think he's going to go to war.
Yes.
And he's basically, his plan currently right now is to defend Trump vehemently, you know, against the globalists, you know, in the Republican Party and also just sort of like in the country and to continue to sort of like promote the ideas. You know, he on some level thinks that it's his ideas that were the mastermind of getting Trump elected. Right. And I think in some respects, he's certainly right. So he But we also know that he has said some really shitty things about Trump before.
I mean, he's there to advance his agenda, not Trump.
Well, right, exactly. And I think that it's going to be, like, as of tomorrow night at 9 o'clock Eastern time, when Trump announces what he's going to do in Afghanistan, which we're going to talk about next, I think it's going to be the first sign of how this thing plays out. Because Steve Bannon is not trying to send thousands of more troops over to Afghanistan. I mean,
no.
This is probably a thing that Steve Bannon and I could come together on here.
It's the one thing. It's like how me and Scalia agree on pizza. It's right, there's always something.
Yeah. And, you know, he's got all of these generals in his ear. He's got a new chief of staff who comes from the army or wherever, the military. I don't know where he came from. Who knows? It's all the same to me. And
I learned there are a lot more generals than I ever thought. Based
right? I know. I recently learned that. They're all pushing hard for a big military increase there, which is not what Trump himself ever claimed to want to do. It's not what he it's not what he ran on. It's certainly not what Bannon wants to do. And I think as soon as this thing with Bannon at Breitbart turns into, you know, Bannon having this presidency be not exactly what he's looking for, I think it could get nasty in a way that I am totally here for.
Totally. I know. I'm interested to see this too. Because so the thing that is going to be interesting about his announcement tomorrow about his Afghanistan plans is that there's a rumor kind of circulating that, and not really a rumor because we know it's happening, but there's been talk recently of Eric Prince, who's Betsy DeVos's brother and is the founder of Blackwater, the military contractors, has been basically for years trying to peddle the idea that Blackwater should just be hired to take over the war in Afghanistan as mercenaries, essentially. And then the military can kind of abandon it. And there are a lot of reasons why no one's taken them up on that offer. Among them, that hiring a private company to fight your war is a sort of politically questionable thing to do. And the military is not generally excited about having private contractors, you know, carry out policy for the U.S. government.
Yeah.
And or for the U.S. military. So that is that's why no one else has taken him up on this offer. But, you know, Trump seems like as good a guy as any. So instead of Eric Prince is maybe the one CEO that's staying close to Trump's side. And Trump and his military advisors are met this weekend at Camp David to discuss what's going on in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
But
well, you know, it's been 7 months and they they don't have any different plan than they did when they got there.
So exactly. He hasn't had a plan so far. But this is suddenly in the context of knowing that Eric Prince has actually had the president's ear, which is different than in normal situations when everyone's been like, okay, guy. And he's not the only one with this plan. There are other people who are submitting proposals to use private contractors, but this would be very much up Trump's alley, except that suddenly he has all these
private
generals.
Sector.
Yeah, it's the private sector. But suddenly he has all these generals working for him, and it's not an idea the military is very interested in. And one that the military rightfully finds kind of, you know, problematic.
Yeah.
Because as you might not be surprised, Blackwater's main interest is not United States security and protection. It is making money. So they are for hire. And that means that they're objectives are not the same as the military's when they go into a place like Afghanistan. Whatever you think about our involvement in Afghanistan, we at least know that the United States as a whole has some control over what our military does in Afghanistan because they are there theoretically for our protection. And they may not be carrying out their goal, or their agenda the way that you and I would hope, but that's ultimately their only objective. And Blackwater has a different objective, which is to make money doing things. So there's really no incentive for them to finish up the war in Afghanistan. There's no incentive for them to do things that are in the interest of the United States or U.S. citizens in general, because that's not who they work for. They work for whoever's paying them, and anyone can pay them. It doesn't have to, you know, anyone can pay them while we're paying them. They have no, you know, master. So in any case, that's why it's concerning. But so it'll be interesting to see tomorrow what his, or I guess today, well, you know, it'll be while you're listening to this podcast, but we'll find out what his plans in Afghanistan are. I'm sure they're brilliant because he only has the best plans.
Exactly.
And then
important to remember, by the way, that this is the, someone brought this to my attention this week. I mean, I knew this already, that it's the, I believe it's the longest, this specifically Afghanistan, it's the longest military conflict that we've been in,
yeah.
I believe, correct?
Is that, I think so,
not accurate?
Yeah. I
By the way,
so.
For all of the people, you know, of a generation who sort of like, you know, either Vietnam or World War II or whatever, who like to talk about us millennials being lazy, like, we're currently fighting your longest war right now.
Yeah. We're engaged, I mean, in all of the work. I mean, Brent and I are not, personally.
But I mean, like, honestly, though, like, I don't think that people think in those terms a lot.
Yeah.
But this has been going for near 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
yeah, think
baffling.
About when this began. And think about, I mean, because not, you know, in Afghanistan, we've been involved in conflicts there before. But
well, for sure,
our involvement in Middle Eastern conflicts of this nature, i.e. civil wars that we're injecting ourselves into, yeah. or, you know, nations that we've, destabilized and then are just kind of like stuck in, dates yeah. back to long before 9/11 even. And, you know,
no,
this
for
Afghanistan
sure.
conflict dates back to specifically 9/11. But the reason that we can't extricate ourselves from this region is because we keep fucking it up and then having, you know, no plan for what we're going to do. So we just kind of hang
yeah.
around.
Yeah.
A mess.
Yikes.
Yep. And it's helping fuel attacks like what we saw in Barcelona this week because
yeah.
They have now had one of those car attacks where a van plows through a crowd of pedestrians and kills people.
Yep.
This week it was 14 people died because it was in Barcelona and it's high season in Barcelona, and the van went down a pedestrian thoroughfare called Las Ramblas, which is like the main kind of plaza of the touristiest area yeah. of Barcelona.
I knew two people who were there at the time on vacation.
I mean, I'm not
and I was
surprised.
Like, holy cow. Yeah, I mean, it's like
I know someone who had just yeah. left. Everyone is yeah. in Barcelona in the summer. That's where everyone is. If you want to know where people are, it's
sure.
in Barcelona in the summer. It's
yeah.
I went last summer.
I was going to say you were
everyone
there.
Everyone was there with me. The
yeah.
whole country, I mean the whole
sure.
world was there. It
yeah.
was the most crowded place I've ever been in my entire life. And I grew up in Manhattan, you guys. So
right. yeah.
that's saying something. But so in any case, there were also two other deadly events that occurred along the coastline in Catalonia-ish area.
Yeah.
One in a seaside city that's just south of Barcelona called Cambrils. And then there was also a house explosion in Alcanar, which is also on the coast, farther down the coast. They have two suspects, but somebody is still at large from the van attack.
Yeah, because they did, I think they have arrested two people, correct?
Yes.
Yes, they have. Yeah, one from Morocco and one was...
from a Spanish enclave in Melilla.
But yeah, somebody is... It's actually the driver who they're still looking for, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
He kind of escaped
yeah.
into the crowd in Barcelona. An interesting thing happened, though, because ISIS kind of vaguely claimed potential responsibility for this attack, but ISIS almost never claims responsibility for an attack where there are still people at large. And so this was a kind of break for tradition or they claimed responsibility because it was a good attack and they wanted credit. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. It was a little weird, though, because like their media arm said that the attackers were, quote, soldiers of the Islamic State. So that's basically saying that they were sort of like
right.
ISIS members.
ISIS
but,
is
like,
the Islamic
ISIS
State
itself, like as like the sort of like organization itself. Has not
right.
claimed responsibility
explicit responsibility
itself.
So they've claimed
sort of
like vague
two
responsibility.
Two guys that worked for us did it, basically, is what they're saying.
Right.
I mean, not worked for, but, you know, but they haven't said that, like,
we
did it.
We ordered it.
Yeah. Which is a curious sort of like, I don't know.
I know. I feel like
totally
they were just
sense,
sort of like, oh, an attack. We should say it was
right?
ours.
Right?
Why
yeah.
not?
Yeah.
In classic Trump form, he could not stop himself from saying something ridiculous and stupid about it.
No.
First, he tweeted some, you know, your average, like, our hearts are with the people of Spain
yeah.
and Barcelona, blah,
probably
blah, blah.
Thoughts and prayers, probably.
But then he took an extra step into crazy and tweeted an alternative fact, if you
yes.
will, about a famed U.S. general who was rumored, like, this is like a myth that has been long disproven. This
oh, yeah.
is, you know, this is like a ridiculous myth.
Yeah. And Trump has used this on the stump before, like
right.
as his plan to deal with Muslim extremists. Like,
yeah. So this was this is a sort of story, of, like some mythology about a U.S. general in the Philippines who supposedly kept Muslim militants at bay by shooting them with bullets dipped in pig's blood.
Yes.
History has long since written this off as complete nonsense. But that has never stopped him from repeating a fake fact.
Yeah.
So he's all set with that.
Boy.
And then in final news, there's an eclipse today as you're listening to this.
I was going to say, yeah, you might be listening to this while watching
the eclipse. While watching the eclipse. With glasses, Brent hopefully, is guys. An eclipse truther, though.
Sure.
I spent all day trying to get some sort of solar glasses situation worked out, even though there's literally no solar glasses up for sale anymore anywhere.
I have been a person who was sort of like, and when I saw it on the podcast doc, I was sort of like, you know what? Maybe I'll read a bunch of stuff about why I'm supposed to care about this eclipse. And then, like, get myself caring about it.
Sure.
And it just didn't work out.
Didn't happen for him. Yeah.
No. Mm-mm. I get that it's a thing, but, like, I just am having a hard time, like, making myself want to track down glasses so I can stare at the sun for 2 minutes. I don't know.
I will say that I'm excited to see it, but also I am not traveling to a place where there's going to be a full eclipse,
What'd you say?
I've seen a partial eclipse before. Those are less rare.
Yeah, I feel like what has been sort of like bringing me down on the whole thing is like seeing people on Facebook like traveling like literally across the country and like marking themselves in a place like, and like I think there's a thing on Facebook where you can like basically like be checking into like a place where you're watching the eclipse, because there's like places where it's a total eclipse and like places where it's longer, like in that, you know, like the place near, I just happened to, and another reason why I think I was sort of like, all right, everybody slow your roll, was because a couple weeks ago I was in Illinois. I was visiting my grandmother, and Carbondale, Illinois, which was very close to where I was, is like the place where like technically it has the, like the longest viewing of it. It's going to be 2 minutes and 43 seconds. Most other places are getting it like for around 2 minutes. And it was already weeks ago starting to be like a total madhouse. Like every single hotel room had been, you know, selling for way overpriced. They were all booked up. I saw my aunt who lives in the area post something on Facebook the other day about like the traffic into the city looks like it's people trying to escape the apocalypse, basically. And like it's stuff like that that sort of like makes me want to just like actively like just like be in a dark room for 2 minutes tomorrow morning. Like, so sorry guys, don't mean to be an eclipse buzzkill, but
it will also be available for viewing on the internet, so you could watch it from your dark room and not deal with anyone.
Oh, that's very true. Yes. Or I could go make like one of those like cereal carton box things that everybody did in the, you know,
in the 60s second grade
when eclipse or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I am excited to see it because it seems like an activity, and I'm currently in upstate New York and there's not that many activities.
Sure.
But I feel like I didn't know it was a thing at the same, apparently everyone already knew it was a thing. I found out about it very recently, so that's why I've been less prepared. Also, apparently there's another full eclipse coming through, and this one is going sort of like making an X in the other direction across the country in 2024. So I feel like maybe I'll just watch that one. I also could be wrong about that.
I'll be an old person then, and I feel like I'm going to care about it more then.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Well, you'll at least be grumpier so you can have this conversation, you know, many more times before then, and then you'll have more to complain about, so that'll be something.
That's something I love. There it is. Hopefully the eclipse, the one thing I will say about the eclipse is that hopefully there are a lot of people out there who claim that like major astrological events like this bring about change, and like people have been pointed to the fact that like this is the first one that you could see coast to coast in America for like God knows how long. So like, you know, I'm
for it. Maybe Donald Trump will resign tomorrow. Respect.
I'm still don't know that I care about watching it, but like if it's, you know, if Tuesday morning, you know, Trump is resigning, then I'm here for this eclipse.
That's right. Yeah, he'll retroactively decide how much he cares about this eclipse based on the kind of change it brings. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
In any case, that's the news this week. Next week, we will be back together again. And so Maybe the sound quality will be better. I don't know.
I don't know. Did we even mention that we were on different coasts? I feel like we
did. I think we did. I think we did.
Did we?
Yeah. Oh, it's bi-coastal. We're not in the same city, you guys. If this sounds great, send us a text. An email congratulating
tell
us.
Because we really did.
We fucking killed it. Yeah. Right. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye, guys.